I recently beat the world record for the fastest 100-meter dash. The old record was set by Usain Bolt at 9.58 seconds, which I completely crushed in only 4.93 seconds. Although spectacular, this is completely false. And I'm assuming none of you believe that, but if you did, I'm flattered. We hear stories and other anecdotes like this, although usually not as exaggerated, that we often question and are disbelieving of, and for good reason. It's often seen as a bad trait to be gullible and believe everything we hear, because it fills our brains with misinformation that's biased, altered, or completely fabricated. This could be information about scientific discoveries, politics, personal accomplishments, ghosts, UFOs, the girl your friend is dating that you wouldn't know because she goes to a different school. The list goes on and on. We often choose to believe claims once we are provided proof and solid evidence to back it up. This was the same for Thomas in the Doubting Thomas story. Thomas was one of 12 of Jesus' apostles, and after the other apostles told him the good news of Jesus' resurrection, Thomas said, "Unless I shall see in his hands the print of the nails, and put my finger in the print of the nails, and thrust my hand into his side, I will not believe." Occasionally, a rumor pops up about a famous dead celebrity being seen in a foreign country where they're supposedly hiding out, and we're quick to dismiss these stories without proper evidence. So why should Thomas's story be any different? Thomas may be met with scorn for doubting the other apostles, but would we have been any different? It's easy to ridicule Thomas and say, "How could you not believe what you hear about Jesus, who you long followed and who saved you from your sins?" Thomas could have chosen not to believe what he heard for many reasons, including that he didn't want to get his hopes up in case it really wasn't true. But the biggest difference between the Doubting Thomas story and stories nowadays is that we're doubting other people, and Thomas was doubting the power of God. Now, I can't say that I'm better than him in this case, and many others would agree. No matter how hard we try, there will be knowledge and information out there that we will never know for certain, and that isn't a bad thing. I'm not saying you should take the word of any person you come across in your day-to-day life, but it is good to accept that we can't and won't know everything. In those moments of uncertainty where you question why or how something could have happened, that's where faith comes in. If you can't have the facts, have faith.
I'll believe it when I see it. We say that a lot in our everyday lives, and yes, I say it sometimes. Sometimes it might be, "Mom, I can't help clean up the dishes. I'm cleaning my room." Her response, "I'll believe it when I see it." Or it might be, "Oh my gosh, dude, I found the funniest meme ever." And my other friend will respond, "Oh yeah, I'll believe it when I see it." This is a common phrase that many of us use, yet it speaks many bounds. Today, we read about Thomas. Now, my interpretation of this reading is, so Thomas is just hanging out, right? And all of a sudden, all the disciples rush up to him and they're like, "Thomas, Thomas, you're never going to believe what happens." So, like many of us, Thomas is thinking, "Okay, what's happening? What's the big news?" Then the disciple says, "Jesus is alive." Now, many of us, like Thomas, would be thinking, "No way, that can't be. We've seen Jesus died. How can he be alive?" So naturally, Thomas's reaction is, "I'll believe it when I see it." Well, that's when things get really interesting. Jesus appears to him and tells Thomas to touch him where he's died if he does not believe. Now, getting a little off topic, many of you know that I'm on the track team. I do many events individually as well as a part of a team. Those relays, that's what we call them, is when you're in a race with part of a team. So being a track runner, I can tell you the hardest part of running with a team is the handoffs in a relay. There are many different ways that we hand off to one another, but one of the techniques we use is called a blind handoff. Now, the blind handoff is when one person has the baton and they're finishing the race with everything they have. And then there's the teammate waiting for them to receive the baton to get it in their hand before a certain mark. If they drop the baton, we're disqualified as a team. To make it even harder, we don't say anything to each other. We have to be listening and counting each other's steps so we can make it between the marks. Now, again, to make it even more complicated, if the next runner takes off too fast, we might not make it into the marks. Take off too slow, and you're risking running a better time. So there are so many things that could go wrong, and you may not always believe in your teammate to get the handoff to you until the baton is in your hand. You may not believe in your teammate to run their leg of the race fast enough. And that is when we need to have faith. This year, I've realized that I must have faith in my team. Faith can work miracles. You put a little faith into your teammate, and it helps them cast the doubts out of their head before a race and helps them perform better. Likewise, they put faith in you and help you cast away your doubts. So, overall, in order to succeed in life, we must have confidence in our relay and in the race ahead of us. We have to have faith in our teammates. God is a teammate, and he passes the baton to us. And sometimes we need to have faith in him when we pass the baton off to him.
All right. Many of us have heard the phrase peeping Tom, but at least for me, I never encountered the phrase doubting Thomas before a few weeks ago when I heard what Bible verse we were told to use. However, when I did hear that phrase, it resurfaced a very funny memory in my head that had been long buried. As you guys know, my dad's full name is Thomas, and this is a story of when he had doubt. Several years ago, during the summer of 2013, my family had decided to take a trip down to Beaufort, South Carolina. Beautiful town, visit it. As we were driving south, we were passing through some very marshy swampland. And what do you think my 12-year-old brain could think of? Alligators. I told my dad there was a very good chance that we may run into some, as their range extends from Florida all the way up to North Carolina. He dismissed my statement, saying that alligators only lived in like Georgia, Florida, and maybe Texas. Mom agreed with me, though, and the small debate in the car ended with a "just you wait and see" from Mom and I. Flash forward a few days, and we were in Beaufort. We were on our way to the beach, and on that drive down, we had to pass through a state park. At the end of this trail that we were driving, there was a large building where the park rangers had their HQ. Outside the building lay a small pond, with a sign nearby saying, "Do not feed the alligator." I showed the sign to Dad, but he dismissed it, saying, "They must have a fake alligator here. There's no way that's real." However, as we walked towards the building, we saw it. Laying on the opposing bank was this large, obsidian-scaled creature, teeth white as snow, with eyes as black as night. There was the alligator, guarding over its nest in the background, a small mound of dirt and debris. Not only was this apex predator staring us in the eyes, but it was also an expectant mother. As we entered the building, we asked the park ranger how many alligators lived in the park. And he told us, and hear me out here, around 500. Even though he may deny it, my claim was validated, and the doubting Thomas was no more. Now, I'm no Jesus, far from it, and neither was that alligator. However, Jesus had a similar encounter with his own doubting Thomas in the Bible. The Bible states, "Now Thomas, One of the 12 was not with the disciples when Jesus came. So the other disciples told him, "Hey, we've seen the Lord." But he said to them, "Unless I see the nail marks in his hands, and I put my finger where the hole is, and put my hand into his sides, I won't believe you." A week later, his disciples were in the house again, and Thomas was with them this time. Though the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." And then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here. Look at my hands. Reach out your hand and put it in my side. Stop doubting and believe." Thomas said to him, "My Lord and my God." Then Jesus told him, "Because you've seen me, you believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." The lessons of both these stories are one and the same. It's always good to have faith and to not doubt, even when the going gets tough. You have to remember, Thomas had to be around at the time of Jesus' death at the hands of the Romans, which was a gruesome, terrible event. Anyone within their right mind might second guess the Lord's second coming. Similarly, today, it's hard to not have doubt of the good in our lives when we see so much negativity via our media outlets and just everyday life. But we can only surpass the doubt and negativity by having faith, not only in the Lord, but also in ourselves. As I move forward in my life, with the great friends I've gained throughout the years, remind me to never have doubt and to always have faith. Thanks be to God.